the responses from Ribbono Shel Olam in the event that Klal Yisrael will transgress mitzvahs of the Torah. And as we spoke about last week, the reason for these curses, the reason for these punishments is Tachas Asher Le'Avadatas Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha V'Tuv Leivov, because there was something lacking, something missing in Simcha, the Kiyum HaMitzvos. And immediately after Parshas Kisavo, with this lengthy Techocha, comes Parshas Nitzavim, this week's Parsha, Nitzavim Vayelech. We read two Parshas together this week. Parshas Nitzavim also has some scary things in it. There's a machlokes in the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis as to whether the parasha of Nitzavim can also be defined as being a parasha of Techocha or not, with a variety of nafkaminas, if it is Techocha or it isn't Techocha. But whether it is Techocha or it isn't Techocha, irrespective of that, there's no question that if you learn this week's parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu said some very, very, very tough things to Klal Yisrael. There's a certain expressions there that Moshe Rabbeinu uses, that if Klal Yisrael will behave in a negative way, then the Ribbono Shel Olam will have no choice and have to react the same way as he reacted in reference to Stein V'Amera, who react in reference to what Klal Yisrael are doing, overturn cities, destroy, etc., etc. However, there's something very unique about Parshas Nitzavim as opposed to Parshas Kisavo. Parshas Kisavo is Techocha, Parshas Kisavo tells us what's going to happen if we don't keep the mitzvahs, but there it's all talking about somebody who actually did something wrong. The whole of Parshas Kisavo is talking about somebody who actually did Averis. That's not what Parshas Nitzavim is talking about. All the terrible things that will happen to Klal Yisrael, which are recorded in Parshas Nitzavim, in this week's Parsha, I'm talking about the guy who actually did anything. He never actually did any action whatsoever. Pen yesh bochem isha isha, maybe there is amongst you either male or a female, shpocha, maybe a family, shevet, maybe a tribe, asher levavoi poina hayoi me'im Hashem elekeinu laleches la'avodes elei hei hagoyim ohein. Maybe there is amongst you a guy who's thinking about acting like a goy. He's not doing anything. He hasn't actually done anything. The thought went through his mind, maybe he should do something which can be defined as the action of a non-Jew and not the action of a Jew. And the pasuk continues, and the pasuk says, which means, pen yesh bochem, that maybe there is amongst you sheirish, a root, pora, reish velano, that's poisonous, its fruit is poisonous, that it's bitter. In other words, the very fact that the thought crossed your mind means that there's something there which will develop. And if the thought goes through your mind of doing something which is connected to you, then bam! We have a klal. And the klal always is that whatever is told to us on the negative side, the flip side to it, the reverse, the positive side is always much stronger. In other words, the positive is always infinitely stronger than the negative. Around about 3,275 years ago, it's about 3,275 years ago, a certain event took place. If the Cheshbon is correct, I think it was in the year 2493 after the world was created. Certain event took place. And the Torah records this event. What does the Torah record? What does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us that Am Yisrael went out of Egypt and they started traveling through the Midbar, started traveling through the desert. Vayichen Yisrael neged Aho. And Klal Yisrael got to a certain mountain. What was the mountain? The mountain was Har Sinai. And they encamped. Vayichen Yisrael neged Aho. They encamped in front of the mountain. Vayikra Hashem l'Moshe. And Rabbi Yisrael spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. He called Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayeimer Elav. And he said to him, Kaysem l'Beis Yaakov, Tagir l'Bnei Yisrael. I want you to give over a message from me to Am Yisrael. Men, the women, to everybody. What's the message? Says Rabbi Yisrael, the message is a very simple one. You saw, Tem Reisem, Asher Asisi l'Mitzrayim. You saw what I did to the Egyptians. And you saw the way that I did miracles for you and brought you out of Egypt. I want you to know something. I'm going to give you a Torah, says the Rebbe Shalom. V'yatem im shomer tishmu v'kol yushmatem es brisi. If you're going to keep this Torah, v'yisem l'mizkur mikol ha'amim, then you will be very singular, you will be very unique. You will be a unique nation for me. V'yatem tiyulim ha'mleches koinim v'gei kodesh. And you'll be ha'mleches koinim, you'll be a holy people. You'll be special for me if you keep this Torah that I'm going to give you. Go tell this to Bnei Yisrael. So off goes Moshe Rabbeinu, gets the whole of Bnei Yisrael together, gets the whole of Klal Yisrael together. Whole of Klal Yisrael. About Be'erech Lefi the Cheshmer was 4 million people. There were 600,000 males from the age of 20 and upwards, and there was women, and there was children, and there was Erev Rabbah, all sorts of people that weren't taken into the Cheshmer. And the Forsh make a Cheshmer, Be'erech, somewhere, different opinions. Ballpark between 3 million to 4 million people, they're all assembled there. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them over what God said. They listen, they hear, and all them. What do they answer? Two words. Whatever God says, Na'aseh v'nishma. That's what Klal Yisrael answers. Everything that happened to Klal Yisrael after this point in time, from the point in time that Klal Yisrael made this statement of Na'aseh v'nishma, everything that happened to Klal Yisrael from that point in time, the fact that they got Eretz Yisrael, the fact that they got autonomy in Eretz Yisrael, that they had their own government, that they were independent in Eretz Yisrael, the fact that they became one of the most powerful nations in the world, if not the most powerful nation in the world, is certain kufas when things were going okay. These were all a result of the fact that Klal Yisrael at this point in time said two words. What were the two words that Klal Yisrael said? Na'aseh v'nishma. Probably the most successful statement that Klal Yisrael ever made in the history of Klal Yisrael. And Chazal made such a tremendous fuss about these two words that Klal Yisrael said. This Na'aseh v'nishma that Klal Yisrael said. But Chazal go on and they describe what happened when Klal Yisrael said Na'aseh v'nishma. 600,000 malachim, angels descended with crowns, crowned everybody, one crown connected Na'aseh, one crown connected Nishma, like Ansa Maisa. Right? Endless Divrei Chazal about the tremendous impact in heaven that the statement of Na'aseh v'nishma caused. Says the Zohar, what was Na'aseh v'nishma? Says the Zohar, what were they saying when they said Na'aseh v'nishma? Says the Zohar, what's Na'aseh v'nishma? Na'aseh b'uvdin tavim. We're going to do ma'asim tovim, we're going to do the mitzvahs. V'nishma v'pizgom in derais, and we're going to learn Torah. So Klal Yisrael made this great statement. The Rebbe Shlom says, if you will keep my Torah, then you will be an amskulim, amlechaskenim, goy kodesh, etc., etc., etc. Klal Yisrael get all excited, and they say, Na'aseh v'nishma, we're going to keep Torah, we're going to learn Torah. 600,000 malachim descend, give out crowns, do this, do that, and some isa. And it was all garnished, megarnished. It was nothing. Why? Because what it was they said, yes, we will do it. In other words, They flash through their mind a thought. Yeah, all right, fine, we'll do mitzvahs, we'll learn Torah. And they verbalize the thought that they had in mind. Did they actually do anything after that point in time? No. Because Chazal say that they only actually started doing things 1,000 years later. There was 1,000-year gap between the statement, Na'aseh v'nishma, and until they actually did something. Why? Because in the Pasuk in Megillas Esther, the whole story of Esther took place 1,000 years after Matan Torah. The Pasuk says, Kimu v'kibla yudim aleyem v'alzarom. Say Chazal, what does it mean, Kimu v'kibla yudim aleyem v'alzarom? Omar Rava. Rava said, Gemara, Megillah, Kimu bimei Esther. They actually fulfilled from the point in time of the story of Esther and Haman, that's when they started keeping Masha Kiblu Kva, what they promised at Matan Torah, namely Na'aseh v'nishma. So first of all, they had this fleeting thought of Na'aseh v'nishma, which they verbalized, and immediately has this tremendous impact, and all sorts of things are happening, and Malachim are flying around and giving out crowns, and who knows what, whatever that means. And yet they haven't done anything yet. Nothing. Gormished. 1,000 years later, then they'll start actually doing something. And not only that, 40 days after they make this statement, which causes this tremendous upheaval in heaven and in all the metaphysical spheres that are going on, and who knows what, all of them, except for one tribe, Sheva Levi, who are very small if you look at the numbers, which are recorded 3 times in the Torah, the numbers of how many people each tribe consists of. The Levim were always the smallest. 40 days after they make this statement of Na'aseh v'nishma, 40 days later, they're all doing the worst avera that exists in the Torah. One of the 3 averas on which is Yarag v'Aliyava, namely Avodah Zarah. They're all dancing around an eagle. So that whole Na'aseh v'nishma was a load of. So what's going on here? Rav Dessler makes a very interesting comment, not in relationship to this, but generally speaking, he makes a very interesting comment in one of his essays, but I'll say it out to you in my language. But basically what I'm telling you over is Rav Dessler, it's elaborated upon by Rav Chaim Friedlander, his Talmud and his Sforim, but it's basically, he says the following. He says that the human personality basically consists of 3 components. People are always saying, who is it? What is a person? How do you define a person? So he says basically a human being consists of 3 components: action, speech, and thought. Most people, present company excluded, but most people think. Then there are those who verbalize their thoughts, and then there are those who act. And basically that's the makeup of the human being. He thinks, he talks, and he acts. We understand that out of these 3 components, the most important, or that which carries the greatest weight, is action. And there's a very simple reason for that. We live in a very material world, and the only way in which we can appreciate something or even understand something is by using our senses. And the more we can use our senses, the more we understand something. If you can see something, hear something, and feel it, you can understand it better than if you can only see it without being able to hear it, without being able to feel it, or if you can only hear it, and you can't see it, and you can't feel it. The more you're able to use your senses, the chushim that you have, klape an object, the more, the better you will relate to the object, and the better you will understand the object. It is very difficult for us to understand objects which we can't use our senses in order to understand them. Shimshon Farhish has a very interesting moshel that he uses. He says the following. He says, if you're sitting in company, there's a group of people sitting around the table, and they're talking, it's a social event. All of a sudden, one guy gets up, looks the other guy straight in the face. There's no past history between them, they don't know each other, they just met at the social function, and he slaps the guy around the face. For absolutely no reason at all. Then he carries on talking. Weather, stock market, what are they talking about? So Shimon Shapiro Hirsch, what's the reaction of the people around the table? He says, the instinctive reaction of people when they see something like this is to say to themselves, oh, that wasn't fair. There was no reason for him to do that. Maybe if the other guy had somehow done something to him, he'd angered him, he'd annoyed him. Huh? So he reacted, he gave him a slap around the face, I don't understand that. Says Shimon Shapiro Hirsch, why is it that we sometimes see certain events and we say to ourselves, instinctively, we say, that's not fair, that wasn't fair. What determines whether something is fair or something is not fair? So he says that psychologists maintain the way in which people determine as to whether something is fair or not is by using a process which psychologists call transferal. In other words, what you do is you say, how would I feel if somebody did this to me? So if you see something happening and you say, well, if that was happened to me, it would be uncomfortable, you say, that's an uncomfortable event. If you see something happening and you think, oh, if that happened to me, I'd enjoy that, you say, that's an enjoyable event. Everything works by transferring. Therefore, here we have a major problem. Major, major problem. What's the major problem? We can't relate to anything which isn't equal to us. Because we've got no idea how they feel, so we don't know how we would feel. So Shimon Shapiro Hirsch is the following. When you see a guy slapping another guy around the face for no reason at all, you say, oh, if I got slapped around the face, I wouldn't like it. Therefore, slapping him around the face is not fair. But when you see a guy pick up an iron bar and hit the stone, do you get the same feeling? No. Why not? Because you don't know what the stone feels when it gets hit. Because you can't put yourself in place of the stone. You can't use transferal. If you can't use transferal, you don't know whether it's uncomfortable, not uncomfortable, pleasant, or maybe stones like being hit with iron bars. Who knows? We don't know. We can't relate. And the same is true to things which are higher than us, not only things which are lower to us. Do we know what the neshama feels when it eats tarifus? No. We've got no idea, so we can't tell people whether it's unpleasant, pleasant, we don't know. Mechazal say it's mutamtum salev, it's unpleasant, but we can't feel it. If we can't use our senses, there's no way we can relate to it. Something which is like us, or daima. So because we have inside us some type of animal instinct as well, therefore we can relate better to animals than we can to stones. Now there are super sensitive people, you know, who hear trees talking, and are sensitive. I once went out with a girl, before I was married, and we were walking. She said, did you hear that? I said, did I hear what? She said, did you hear the tree talking? I said, pleasant evening, have a good day, here's money for a cab, go! Right? But there are people who hear things. But normal people don't, so we don't know what a tree feels. I mean, you see a guy sawing a tree, right? A guy sawing a branch off a tree before Sukkot. You go, ooh, 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 it hurts! No, you don't. Why? You don't know whether the tree feels anything when it gets through some of the saws. If you can't use your senses, you can't relate to things. Actions, and second, the result of actions, are something which we see, sometimes we can hear, depends what the action was, and sometimes we can feel. Speech, we can't relate to like an action. We can't relate to it like an action, because we can't see it, We can't feel it, but l'chol ha'pachos we can hear it. So we can still somewhat relate to it. But machshava, thought, we don't see it, we don't hear it, we can't feel it, therefore it's meaningless to us. We don't relate to it, and we don't give it any type of importance whatsoever. If you ask a person, put into order of importance thought, speech, and act, what he'll always do, says Rav Dessler, is he'll say, well, the most important is action. After that comes speech, and after that comes thought. Because thought is the most abstract. Speech is a little more concrete. Action is really concrete. Says Rav Dessler, that's true. You know where that's true? That's true in the Olam HaDimyon that we live in. That's true in the virtual world that we live in this imaginary world that we live in. But it's not true in the real world. In the real world, which is the world of Ruchnius, it's the exact opposite. The less concrete something is, the more abstract it is, the closer it is to Ruchnius. That's why it's more abstract, because Ruchnius is something which is abstract, it's not concrete. The Maran Mipag says the following. The Pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kvad Peh. That's why he didn't want to go to Paro. He said, I'm not communicative. I'm not articulate. How do the English translations translate it? My comic book of the Bible. How does it describe Moshe Rabbeinu? He stuttered. He stammered. Says the Maran, rubbish. He never stuttered and he's never stammered. Never stuttered and never stammered. He spoke like everybody else. Says the Maran, it's a different problem. There is an Olam HaGashmi out there. There is a material world and then there is a spiritual world. What connects between the spiritual world and the material world? Speech. Because speech is a little bit of both. It's not concrete, it's not material, it's not something you can see, it's not something you can feel, but it does have a certain materialism to it because it can be heard. On the other hand, it's abstract in a certain way because it can't be seen and it can't be felt. Therefore, it's the linkage between the Olam HaRuchni and the Olam HaGashmi. Moshe Rabbeinu was so spiritual that he turned around and he said, I can't communicate. I haven't got the power of Dibra. I haven't got that link. I'm too removed from the Olam HaGashmi. Thought creates something. And we don't appreciate that. We don't understand that, and we don't appreciate that. Rav Chaim Volozhin writes, no one, he writes in Nefesh HaChayim in Shah Aleph in Perit Yud Gimel, he says, no one can understand the power of speech, what it can build in the Olamus, and what it can destroy in the Olamus. And al achas kama v'kama, says Rav Chaim Volozhin in Shah Aleph in Perek Vov in the Haggadah, me'eis she'ola al rayon ha'odom la'aseis mitzvah. The minute a person has a thought to do a mitzvah, takev nase rishum le'mailo, it immediately has an effect in all the worlds up there. And it brings down Ashpos from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And a Kedusha surrounds him. He didn't do anything. He just had a machshava, just had a thought. Why? Because the Torah says that man was created in the image of God. How did God create the world? Say Chazal, it says in the Torah how God created the world. B'yasar ma'amoros, with Dibur. There's a machlekes. Was the world created in Rosh Hashanah, or was the world created on a different day? Says the Gemara, both are true. All of the machshav toy, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam thought about creating the world on Rosh Hashanah. The actual Bria. Different time. But the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, all of the machshava is already Bria. Dibur is already Bria. This is already creates. So if man was created, but Tzalmei B'Tavliyah, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, the man can also create with machshava. How do we know this? It's mefurish in the Torah. Those of us who say kabbonis and also the other things that one should be saying before one starts davening shacharis, say every day the parasha of Akedah. What does it say in the parasha of Akedah? The Rebbeinu Shlom said to Avraham Avinu, go, take your son, slaughter him on the Mizbeach. Offer him up. Off goes Moshe Rabbeinu, off goes Avraham Avinu, takes his son, puts him on the Mizbeach, ties him up. The Maras comes down and says, stop! Okay, the Maras says stop, so what does he do? He stops. He unties him, takes him off the Mizbeach. End of the story, right? What does the Rebbeinu Shlom say to Avraham Avinu? Yan, because Ashele Chasavta is Bincha, you didn't have pity on your son, as you did what I told you to do, therefore I'm going to give you this bracha, I'm going to give you this bracha, I'm going to give you this bracha. What are we talking about? What didn't have pity on your son? Did I pity? The Baal said stop. What does the Pasuk say that he did it? He didn't do anything. How do you touch the Pasuk? It's my first Pasuk. Yan Ashele Chasavta is Bincha. How do you translate the Pasuk? Because you did what I told you and you didn't have mercy on your son, therefore I'm going to give you all these brachas. What do you mean you did what I told you? You didn't do what I told you. I told you to kill him, you didn't kill him. But did he have a machshava to kill him? Was he ready to kill him? Yeah. So the Rebbeinu Shlom, enough. The Gemara says a person has a machshava to do a mitzvah, even if he's honest, he didn't do the mitzvah, it's kiddush kiyam tzeis if he did it. Where do we see the ultimate example of this? Says the Maharal, we see the ultimate example of this by Edim Zeimimin. Right? Anybody who was here last month should know the story of Edim Zeimimin. Right? Edim Zeimimin come along, give false testimony about somebody that he killed. They're found to be false witnesses. If they wanted to get the other guy killed but they didn't succeed because Bezni hadn't yet killed him, then they get put to death. If they succeed and already Bezdin put the other guy to death, nothing happens to them. Kasher Zomer v'lo Kasher Osa. Says the Ma'aral, that is backwards. A guy wanted to do something, he gets killed. He succeeded in doing it, no, he doesn't get killed. That's a backward logic. Says the Ma'aral in Gurari on the Pasuk of Kasher Zomer, what's going on here? Says the Ma'aral in Mudik Avot. The Ma'aral says the following. He says, you have to understand something. You have to understand the power of a thought. When a person thinks, it creates something. What does it create? It creates an energy. There is a power to thinking. We don't realize it because it's so abstract to us that we look at it as being nothing. It is more powerful than action, says the Maharal. So if a person thought, and the thought developed into an act, then the thought is finished, and therefore the power is finished because it developed into an act, and the act now took over from the thought. But what happened if you're thinking about doing something and it never developed into an act? Says the Maharal, if I throw a ball, it'll land somewhere. It landed. End of the story. If I had a thought about doing something and it resulted in an action, I threw a ball and it landed, fine. But if it didn't land, for whatever it may be, says the Maharal, it's like a wall. What happens when you throw a ball against the wall? It rebounds back at you. Because seeing there's an energy, the energy has to come back at something. It has to affect itself somewhere. It affects itself back at you. That's Adam Zimmerman. You threw a ball, it didn't result in an action. It never happened, but the energy is there. So the energy rebounds back on you, Kasher Zomer. You don't have to go that far even. You don't have to be so philosophical. There's a story in the Torah. The whole world got together and decided to build a tower. It's called Migdal Bovel. Why they want to build this tower? Who knows? But there's something negative about this tower, that's definite. They wanted to build this tower. God didn't like the tower. He didn't like the tower. So if God didn't like the tower and you were God, what would you do? No, it's not a problem for God. He'll make him decide not to build a tower. I mean, what does Rebbeinu Shlom say? Rebbeinu Shlom says, you know what? I'll confuse the languages, they won't understand each other, they'll try and build the tower, they won't be able to. What do you have to go through this whole rigmarole for? Why do we need that? Says the morale, very simple, why we need that. Because the minute a group of people have a thought, thought has power. And you can't just stop it. It has to go somewhere. So it went somewhere, except they got mixed up on the way. And they wanted killing each other, and therefore never resulted in anything. We, because the fact we're so magushim, we think thoughts are nothing. There's a story told to us in the Torah. Sora, she objected to Hogel. She didn't like the way Hogel was behaving, and she certainly didn't like the way that Yishmael was behaving, and she didn't like the influence that Yishmael was having on Yitzchok. So she said to Avraham Avinu, kick him out. And Avraham Avinu listens, and he kicks them out, and they go out to the desert, and there's no water, and Yishmael's dying of thirst in the desert. And the pasuk says that both Hagar was mispalel for Yishmael, and Yishmael was mispalel for himself. Vayishmael ekim okel hanar, Ribbono Shel Olam heard the prayer of Yishmael. Vayikra malach ekim al Hagar min haShamayim. And Hagar was also praying because she saw her son was dying of thirst. The Malach called to Hagar and he said, "Don't worry. Kishom alekim el kol hanar b'asher lishom." The Ribbono Shel Olam heard the prayer of Yishmael, and there's going to be a miraculous well of water which is going to arise here, and you'll be able to drink from the well and survive. Say Chazal in the Medrash on that pasuk, Omer of Simon, Rav Simon said, "Kofsu malachei asharis lekatregoi." The Malachi Asharis came to argue with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Amru lefanav, they said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ribbono Olamim, Yishmael's descendants are going to try and put the whole of Chal Yisrael to death by not giving them to drink when they're coming out of Egypt and they need water. And you're going to miraculously create a well of water to save his life? This guy is going to cause trouble for Chal Yisrael ad etz mayim hazeh, including today. Right, in Washington, D.C. Yishmael is still causing trouble. Right, him and the Schwarzach. Still causing trouble. Right? Chom and Yishmael together. Having a whale of a time. So why are you saving his life? Omalein HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Ribbono Shel Olam turned around to them and said to them, Achshav Mahu. What's the status of this kid at this point in time, Yishmael? Tzadik or Rasha? Is he a tzadik or is he a Rasha? Omalein Malachi HaShoresh. The angel said, Tzadik. At this point in time, he's a kid, he's a tzadik, he didn't do anything wrong. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam said to them, that's what I just said, that the Malach should tell Hagar. Ki shoma elikim lo kol hanar, the Ribbono Shel Olam heard the prayer of the boy, ba'asher hu shom, where he's at. Meaning, where he's at this point in time. What's going to happen later with him, we don't care. Rabbi Shapiro, speaking to him about an hour and a half ago, said to me, he didn't actually use this phraseology. I'll use the phraseology. He phrased it in a more idle way. He said, "Is Ribbono Shel Olam stupid? Every year we get up there and we say we'll do Rosh Hashanah, and we think we'll do this and we'll do that and we'll change this and we'll change that and we'll do this and we'll do that." And 3 days later, back to the same old story again. Every single year at time, doesn't he get fed up with us ever? The answer is no. Because when Klal Yisrael said Nasa v'Nishma, the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't know that 40 days later they're going to be dancing around an eagle. He knew. So why is 600,000 Malachim coming down with Ksorim and coming down with this and doing this, and what's the tremendous impact of the Nasa v'Nishma? And they actually only start doing something 1,000 years later. The answer is Basher Hushom. All the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from us is one thing and one thing only. Focus in our minds. All Ribbono Shel Olam wants from us is that Rosh Hashanah we should stand there in front of Ribbono Shel Olam and say, and think, and focus our minds, that we want to do the right thing. Will we? Won't we? How long will it last? Irrelevant. Totally irrelevant. That's not our problem. But there has to be a commitment. There has to be a real, true commitment. At that point in time, there has to be commitment. It doesn't have to be lemaisa, it has to be in thought. But it has to be a commitment. The Rambam says that yoidol of yodea ta'alumos. Then he can actually say to Rabban Shalom, at this point in time, my commitment is strong. What will be tomorrow? I don't know. What will be in an hour's time? I don't know. But now, at this point in time, that's all the Rabban Shalom wants from us. Difficult for us to understand, difficult for us to relate to it, because we don't see machshava as being anything. So I thought, so I made a decision, big deal. How many times in my life I made decisions? True. We're so magushin that we don't understand the power of a thought. We don't know what decisions in the mind do up there. As Chaim Voronin says, if a person understood what binyanim he was building, when he made a decision in his mind, irrelevant as to what happens afterwards with that decision. Just the decision, just making the decision. If he knew what was happening up there when he made that decision, his whole life would be different. If he understood, as Reb Chaim Voloshin says, if a person understood when he thought, or when the thought went through his mind, ki me'eis sha'ayla orayan ha'odam la'aseis mitzvah, the person understood that when the idea comes into his mind, when the decision forms itself in his mind, I want to do the right thing. Take of Nasir Rishuma Lamailo. If he knew what an impact it has up there in the Olamus, the Mekol Sholsho Elyon, Umamshich Al Atzmai Omak, if he's bringing down Ashpoyas when he does that, Ukdusha Elyena Chayfefes Al Ovesayim Vesayis, he doesn't understand how much Kedusha is surrounding him when he does that. Because we're so divorced from understanding that. But if we understood that Nakuda, then our davening in Rosh Hashanah would be different. Then our decision making would be different. And our whole Hanhagas Chaim would be different. The Rebbe Shlomo is not looking now, these few days before Rosh Hashanah, he's not looking at what's going to happen next year. He's not looking at what we're going to be looking like, some Gedalia, and what we're going to be looking like, even the Sarasimate Shiva, and what we're going to be looking like. He's not looking at that. He's just saying to himself one thing. Where are they focusing these few days? What's going on in their minds? What decision are they trying to make? Where would they like to be? That's what he's asking. And if we can give him the right answer on that, and if we can have the right machshavas on that, then the Rosh Hashanah promises us that the year with all its negativity, with all its curses, all the negative things that happen this year, will be finished. Tich leshonah v'kin leseah, v'tochu v'shonah in b'chaseah, and the new year starts with its brachas and everything. We're all zeichet to exceed what's in the table. One thing, the time it, the way in which it comes.